Comic Timing is proudly sponsored by the New York Comic Con. New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space with more gaming and anime for 2007. Come to the Jacob Javits Center February 23rd to 25th and experience the biggest pop culture event in New York City, featuring comics, anime, manga, graphic novels, video games, trading card games, RPGs, MMOs, toys, movies, TV, celebrities, and more. Guest of honors include Stan Lee, Jeff Smith, J. Michael Straczynski, and George Perez, with many more to be announced. For a complete list of guests, as well as show information, please visit nycomiccon.com. Buy your tickets online now to ensure your spot for the 2007 show. Tickets are available now at a discounted rate for advance purchase at nycomiccon.com. You can also book your travel arrangements online now on the travel page of the website. Don't miss out on the 2007 New York Comic Con. Visit our website to get all the information you need.
Comic Timing is a proud member of the Comics Podcast Network.
Welcome to episode 23 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as a rotating panel of guests and myself, Ian Levinstein, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. On today's show, we're joined by a bunch of forum goers as Torch Song, alias Al Sparrow, JLA Fan, alias Bob Rattal, and Nightwing BK, alias Brent Cassina, join in to discuss manga. What has this medium done for the American market, and will it affect the American comic book market for years to come? We discuss that and a whole lot more. Here now, Comic Timing. Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levinstein, and welcome to episode 23 of Comic Timing. Well, this week, Matt is MIA as, well, it's mostly my fault, as I forgot to remind him when we were actually recording this week, so he'll hopefully be back next week for another brand spanking new episode. But we do have a return guest. We have Brent Cassina back for week two, and my apologies for calling you Dark Knight BK on the opening for last week's episode, man. It's Nightwing BK, and I will never forget that again, man.
It was close.
Close, but no cigar. Yeah. I got the wrong night, that's all. The wrong night. Next time I'll get the right night. But welcome back, man.
Thanks.
We're also joined by, Big Al is his name here on Skype, but his full name, of course, is none other than Al Sparrow, and he's Torch Song on the Comic Geek Speak forums. Al, how are you?
Doing good.
Glad to have you on, man.
Thanks.
And also joined by Bob Brittal. That's how you pronounce it, correct, Al?
Brittal, actually.
Brittal. Bob Brittal, JLA fan on the forums, so we got a whole bunch of forum goers here, and we're all talking manga today. That foreign beast that seems to be breaking into the comic numbers every single month, but, well, for good reason. And this is pretty much what we're going to be talking about on today's show, and here's what I posted on the Comic Timing forums earlier this week about manga, and here we go. Manga has continued to gain in popularity here in the United States. What is the driving force behind this increase? What do you look for in a manga? Are there any guilty pleasures out there you never thought you would like that you just can't get enough of? What are your all-time favorites? And, of course, what can U.S. comics do to try and catch back those who have crossed over to the world of manga? Post your thoughts here on the forums, and we'll discuss them on the show. And we'll start it off with Al first. Al, what is it like so much about manga?
I don't know. To me, it's just so radically different from what you get with Western comics, and I use that term just to say Marvel and DC, which is the stuff I think I know I did, and most people here on this that are listening to this probably grew up with. You know, the style is so radically different that at first my initial reaction to it was, you know, I really didn't care for it because it seemed to be so radically different, and I've used radically different three times in a sentence now. But as a kid, my first exposure to it was actually not manga, but it was anime, and it was Battle of the Planets. It wasn't until much later I found out it was actually called Gatchaman because I got the Americanized version of it, but at the same time, you've got, you know, five people dressed up in bird suits, but they're ninjas, and they're fighting giant robots, and you weren't getting this on your Saturday morning cartoon dial anywhere when I was growing up. When I got into high school, or just around junior high, that's when Carl Maychek started bringing Robotech over. And from that moment on, the love affair has never gone away. And really, I think I owe anime more than anything for getting me into manga to the level that I am now.
So it's sort of like the front door in, as it were.
Yeah, I mean, it's 10 times easier to watch it sometimes than it is to read it. But, you know, it's definitely, it's a gateway drug. You know, you start with a...
Oh, yeah.
You know, Robotech to me was something that was light years beyond anything. I mean, we have our Transformer fans and we have our He-Man fans and everything, and it's all great. But Robotech was just so amazing because characters died, and they died, and they weren't coming back. They weren't being resurrected. And they died right at the point when you're like, oh, he's such a great character, man. I can't believe that this guy's so awesome. And he died. And that's it. And you're like, well, they killed him, you know? Oh, my God. And it became like a soap opera thing. Big shocker. I was a big geek in high school, so I hung around with all the big geeks.
Really? Really? Wow.
Surprising.
Yeah, wow.
Wow, a guy into anime and manga?
Gee.
But, you know, high school, every morning, there was our little nerd clutch, and we're all like, did you totally see that Rick dissed, you know, Min Mei for Lisa Hayes? Oh, my God, that's so awesome. It was our soap opera.
I totally love that that Battle of the Planets is so influenced by Batman also, watching that back in the day, you know, with all the bird plane and the bird car and the bird boat and bird cycle and all that. You know, it was pretty much just taken straight from almost like a 60s Batman show.
Well, later on we'll talk about Battle of the Planets when we talk about fan service as well, but we'll save that for later.
Yeah.
Another young man's first experience in life. But from there, it's just Robotech started out and Comico started putting out comic adaptations, which were basically import manga. And so I started reading those, and I was like, oh, I got to have more. And this is like the early 80s, and manga was few and far between, at least at that point. Dark Horse wasn't really starting, I don't think, to put out anything. You could get Akira through Eclipse, or was it Pacific?
I think First Comics was doing quite a few. I don't remember who was doing Akira. I know First was doing Lone Wolf and Cub. And they were doing Area 88 and Nausicaa, Valley of the Wind. They had quite a few coming out, and I got several of those.
Yeah, certainly not to the level that we're seeing now.
Yeah, and they were flipped. You know, they were done to really try to play to the American comics audience. They were printed in comic book size, and they were all the art was flipped, so they read left to right.
And it worked.
To an extent. I've read some of those
to
in the past.
It got American audiences. I'm sorry, I'm interrupting.
Yeah. But okay. No.
It got American audiences into it. Now, I'm no fan of flipping by any way stretch of the imagination, but it definitely got people into it, and at least, thank God we got what we got at that point, at least.
Yeah. Bob, what brought you into manga?
Well, it was, you know, that was back then, you know, the first manga that I had been exposed to was probably that Lone Wolf and Cub and the Area 88 that were out back in the 80s, I believe it was. And then when I was a kid, I guess, you know, the local PBS station had Astro Boy and Speed Racer and things like that on it. So I, you know, saw some of the anime, but I was never really hardcore into the, you know, different kind of Robotech or anything like Al was describing. But that was my first exposure, and I really liked Lone Wolf and Cub. And then when Dark Horse started doing the, you know, the complete in the small little, you know, Dark Horse manga format, that's what got me back into manga after, you know, kind of a long gap. And I got that whole set and devoured those and, you know, the subsequent ones by the same team of, probably butchering their names, but Koiki and Kojima, the Samurai Executioner and the Path of the Assassin that is going on right now. I still get those.
Well, Dark Horse has been doing an amazing job with their manga. I mean, a lot of the manga I pick up is Dark Horse, and they've been very faithful with their translations as well. I mean, some moments with accents that sort of were a bit cheesy, you know, like putting the Z and the, you know, Zephyr when it's a German guy or something like that that doesn't exactly work too well when translated. But they've done a pretty decent job with that, and I've been pretty happy with what they've been putting out. Now, Brent, you're sort of the quote-unquote newbie, as it were, when it comes to the manga, as you're pretty much just picking up the Dragon Ball Z stuff, right?
Pretty much a newbie and or outsider. I read all of the Dragon Ball Z manga, and then it stopped there. But I have seen, like, stuff like, well, Thundercats isn't really manga, but I've seen episodes of Robotech. When Gundam Wing was on Toonami, I was watching that. I was watching Dragon Ball Z. I remember Robotech, and I remember Voltron when I was like 4 years old at my aunt's house. We rented a Voltron movie from Blockbuster. So that's really the exposure to anime and manga that I have, and that's about it.
Now, what was it that actually attracted you to the Dragon Ball Z manga? I know, obviously, because you were watching Dragon Ball Z, that's one of the reasons, but, I mean, was it the art itself that really drew you in, or the story, or what?
Yeah, it was in, like, 7th grade, and these kids had, like, these printouts of this cool art, and it was, like, Goku as Super Saiyan or whatever, and I thought that was really cool, so I started asking them questions about it, and they said, oh yeah, this is Dragon Ball Z, it's anime, go look it up on the internet. So basically I started watching the cartoon, and all they had then was when Goku got to Namek, you know, so up until that point they didn't have anything, and a lot of the manga wasn't translated, so basically I read the manga for free, somebody translated it, I don't know if it was correct or anything, but, you know, some like bootleg manga, but I read all that. And then finally when the episodes got translated into English in the anime, they aired those, and I watched those religiously. So this is pretty much what got me interested, just the art style. I thought was really, really cool.
Well, that's something that also you get out of manga that you don't really get out of regular comics, and that's, you know, the scanlations, as it were, that you find online. That sort of similar to what you were just talking about there, where you can find, you know, almost full manga translated, obviously not official, but that actually has gotten me to pick up a couple of manga. I mean, obviously it's a bit shady, but has anybody else here ever read a scanlation online and then picked up the volume when it was released here in the States? I mean, Bob, has that ever happened with you?
Actually, no. It wasn't anything that got me into it, but I did, when I started getting into Death Note, somebody pointed me at some of the scanlations of the later volumes of Death Note, and I was into it, and I like went through, my son and I, my 16-year-old son, he reads Death Note and really likes it also, and we kind of went through a couple of those, but then I stopped, and then, you know, we're just reading them as they come out, you know, because they probably have like 4 or 5 volumes past where we're out now, but, you know, I figured I'll just get them when they come out from Viz.
But it was still nice to actually be able to read that and sort of, you know, get you into the story a little bit, though, correct?
It was interesting because the translation is done slightly different on the one that I read versus when you see the actual one from Viz. They have some different names for some of the characters, and there are some differences.
Al, have you read scanlations in the past? Read scanlations over anything? Or?
It's kind of funny that Bob brings up the Death Note, because that's exactly the same situation I was. I think we probably went to the same site. My whole deal with it is, I think it's great that it's out there. If that's your thing and you want to, you know, get that far ahead of the story, my problem was Death Note to me is just such a great story that I didn't want to be spoiled. So I looked at a couple of pages of it, and then I was like, you know, in God's name, what am I doing? I'm getting ahead of the story. Stop. And I, you know, my one hand grabbed the other and stopped it. So really, other than like an introduction to a series, if it was something where I don't know if I want to put my $10 down on this whole pulp and ink book, then I could see the value of it. A lot of websites for these publishing companies will usually put the first 4 or 5 pages out there for you as well.
Yeah.
It's not really any kind of legalistic thing that I would be worried about. It's just, I don't know. For me, I'm so glad that we have so much manga available to us now that I like to support it, you know?
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely. Without a doubt. And actually, that's something that American companies are doing these days also. I mean, you'll be able to find a lot of the, you know, first maybe 4 or 5 pages released on, say, a Newsarama or comic book resources of that story that's going to be coming out. And that's really something that I feel, you know, started with the Japanese manga that sort of the American companies picked up on. That, you know, giving a little preview, giving a little hint as to what is going to be going on is probably a good idea to get you into the story itself and get you to buy it.
Well, it can only help, and I mean, it can only help secure your audience as well, you know. If I see 5 pages of something and I'm like, oh, I gotta know what happens on page 6, well, it's gonna cost me $10, but it's $10 I'm happy to spend.
Yeah. And also, you're getting so many more pages with a manga than you would get with a trade, usually, for less of a price, most of the time, at least. I mean, Death Note retails for $9, but you can get it online for about $5 if you find it in the right place at the right time. And,
yeah, Death Note's
you're getting
actually
such a complete
only
story.
It's only actually $8.
Yeah, they actually priced the Shonen Advance stuff for only $8.
Which is
a bargain and a half there.
Yeah.
And a lot of the Shoujo Beat titles that Viz puts out, I think, actually retail, I could be wrong on this, so I'm not going to say it, but I think it's actually also $1 or $2 cheaper as well.
Yeah, like Monster, for instance, is $9.99, but Death Note
That I actually have right here, yeah. Okay. And, well, that one I have actually, well, I mean, you can find it online for cheaper, but still, just the fact that it does exist and in such a cheap form and you're getting so many pages in one volume, that's something that definitely you're not finding here in the States. I mean, you gotta pay, you know, $15-$16 sometimes for a trade, and you're getting less of a story sometimes. You're only getting about maybe 6 issues worth while you're getting many chapters here with manga.
The trade-off's usually color. You know, because most of these are, of course, black and white. There's a company, Infinity Studios, that is putting out stuff, and I have yet to actually see one of their books. But if they stick to what their plan is, they're gonna set the world on fire with how they give you your material, because they're throwing in bookmarks, pull out pages of stuff, posters within the manga, all kinds of little extras for the same price.
That's amazing.
If they can actually pull off, like I said, I have not actually seen one of their books on the shelf yet. I just heard about this, and it'll be really exciting. They've got some really good titles too. Some stuff that's been pretty popular overseas and ought to do well here.
Do you know their website?
Infinity Studios. Tell you what, let me pop up the old internet here.
All right. Actually, okay. Now here we go. InfinityStudios.com.
Is it?
There we go. Yeah, I've got it right here. So hopefully this is exactly what is that. Let's see here.
Look at it.
Let's take a look. Yeah, here we go. That's definitely it. InfinityStudios.com.
Yes, and they have one title that I did read called Blood Alone. I had to read it online, but I gave this one the highest review I could. It is absolutely amazing.
All right, well, we'll definitely have to actually look for that.
And Blood Alone is worth it. I got to read it, you know, on a CD format. I'm going to go out and buy these books because they're that good.
Wow. Well, that's probably the best thing you could say about anything if you're going to go out and buy something
What's the 50,000-foot level summary of the story?
With Blood Alone?
Yeah.
Guy is a vampire hunter, your standard, typical vampire hunter. There's a backstory behind why he's a vampire hunter. And in the process of his work, he comes across a young girl who was also a vampire and still is. And it's kind of like a whole throwback, if you ever read Interview with the Vampire, where they made the girl who grew up to be Spider-Man's girlfriend, they made her a vampire. And, you know, there was a horrible thing about how horrible it was and everything, but this girl actually enjoys being a vampire. It's got a little comedy, it's got a lot of action to it, and there's a whole... I don't know, it's rare that you'll get a manga where every single character is so completely interesting to read about. And this is definitely one of those.
Well, you've had me sold already, sir. Oh, man, I gotta maybe track that one down. Do you know any idea how many volumes have been released to that so far? Just one so far?
Two. According to the website, it looks like two.
Okay. All right. Well, that works for me. I might have to actually try and track that down.
It depends. The thing is, I hate vampire stories because they're played out in manga the same way zombie stories are getting played out in Western comics right now.
Okay.
So yeah. For me to say I like a vampire story is for me, it's a big deal.
Well, I'm a fan of Hellsing, and I have been for a while, both the anime and the manga,
yeah.
So hopefully I'll be a fan of this also, because, well, that's a genre that I'm into. But, Brent, I actually wanted to ask you something over here. I mean, obviously, since you've only really picked up one, I mean, why is it that you stopped at one? I mean, is it just because Dragon Ball Z was just so appealing to you and you didn't really see anything else in any other manga? Or, I mean, is it just you're just so into regular American comics?
It could be that I'm more into regular American comics, but, like, I have picked up some, like, Gundam comics and, what was the other one? Blade of the Immortal, where it's, like, made up of, like, worms or something.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I skimmed through a couple, but nothing really, like, grabbed my attention or said, you know, read me more than, like, Batman or Superman.
Why is that exactly? I mean, is it just like the characters are more appealing or what?
To me, it's more relatable. It's more relatable to me because, I mean, sometimes when I read like the Dragon Ball Z stuff, I didn't know what was going on, or it may be some of like the art style, like the way that they do, like, this is just me complaining, but like a lot of it I like in the Dragon Ball Z, but when they're like the humorous moments where they have like the big tear and the big eyes and stuff, it's just kind of turned me off to it, and I'm kind of afraid that a lot of it's going to be like that. And I mean, I know a lot of it's not, and there's different types and stuff, but that's just me.
Well, you're not the only one. I mean, that's actually one of the problems with a lot of the, you know, stereotypes here in America, that everybody pretty much thinks that it's just that, you know, that it's just the big eyes, the you know, the magical girls and the pretty little sidekick animal character, and that's pretty much it, you know. But you know, there are a lot of styles out there, and I mean, Monster for one is definitely a suggestion that I would make. And if you want a further in depth of Monster, just listen to the Comics Podcast crossover we just did. But Monster, Death Note, all those, I mean, there's certainly different than just the big-eyed type of characters.
Yeah, I was looking to get into the Lone Wolf and Cub now that I was listening to the CGS thing. And then the Batman manga by Kiya Ayasama or something. I was looking at that, and that looked really cool. So I might pick that up.
Hey, well, a manga about a character you already know, that's a plus.
Yep.
Bob, you have kids, and as you just stated, that are into manga.
Yes.
What is it that attracts them to manga?
Well, I think that for the younger one, and my younger one is 12, and he does not read any regular comics at all. Mm-hmm. He reads quite a few mangas. He reads mangas that are mostly things that he has been introduced to through the cartoon shows that he watches. You know, so he reads Yu-Gi-Oh!, Millennium World, and Yu-Gi-Oh! Duelist, and Naruto, and Knights of the Zodiac, and Mega Man, and all those kind of Full Metal Alchemist, you know, those kind of things. But they're things that he watches the shows on TV, and he plays the Yu-Gi-Oh! Card game with his friends, you know, so he's all into that. But he has yet to really show that much of an interest in the American comics. Whereas my older son, who's 16, he'll read a lot of those mangas that my younger son reads just because they're there, and he watches the shows also. But he loves Death Note also. I mean, that's his favorite one. And he read Red Rum 327 with me. He read the first episode or issue of Monster and did not really care for it. But then he likes Death Note quite a lot, and you know that's his number one favorite so far. And he likes them. I think just there's something different. He likes the regular comics too, though. I mean, but you know, he's got me for a dad, so he's got like just you know pretty much whatever he wants to read, he has availability.
Yeah, so it definitely helps to have a geek as a dad.
Yeah.
Oh man, but you actually made a good point there with the 12-year-old. Is it because of just how many of these animes make it to TV that you know get him into this? I mean, the fact that you know his friends are probably talking about it, and it's really all you see on Cartoon Network these days are a whole bunch of anime. I mean, that obviously plays a major factor. There aren't many animated series to go with the comics these days in America.
Yeah, you know, I think that there's a strong crossover there, because I know when I was a kid, you know, I read various things, but if I saw, like, a show on TV, and then there was a novelization of it, I loved, when I was the age of my son, you know, I loved reading novelizations of, you know, things that spun out of TV shows or movies that I enjoyed. So I think there's just a natural tendency there, and it's just a tie-in. It's kind of like why on American TV they're not allowed to advertise a toy that's a direct tie-in to the show, because then it would be too much like it's just a half-hour commercial. But it really does tie in, because he wants the little Naruto action figures, and you know he likes the
so do I.
The manga and all that. They all tie together.
Reminds me of the days where they wouldn't do a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles animated unless there was, they wouldn't make the toys unless there was an animated to go with it. And that's the whole reason why they made a Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles animated in the first place, was because they knew that the toys would sell.
Oh, yeah.
Obviously, it's different here because, you know, this anime's been around for ages, but, well, the toys are selling because the anime's around.
I think to some extent that's what led to your popularity of, you know, some of the Robotech stuff too. I mean, it is the animated version that people would see that really, you know, tied him into that. I think, Al, you mentioned that as well.
Well, the beauty of Robotech is Crash Course in Robotech. It was actually three old Japanese series, Macross, Southern Cross, and then the last one I'm going to mispronounce horribly, it's like Mos Paida or something like that. Mm-hmm. And a guy named Carl Maychek brought them over and redubbed them and took these three separate stories and unified them and made one long story and called it Robotech. And the really neat thing about it is, once you really got into Robotech, you were like, well, gosh, I wonder what Macross was, and all of a sudden you find yourself, we didn't have eBay. And back in the Dark Ages, we didn't have eBay. but you found yourself, you know, at conventions and stuff, finding these people who have these VHS tapes of Macross, and, you know, they're not dubbed, so you're watching them in Japanese, but you're watching them nonetheless because you want to see what he brought over and what was different.
I have a question about that. Go ahead, finish your thought.
No, that pretty much was done.
Okay, I was just really curious, because I used to watch that, so that was that now three different animes that he combined into Robotech?
Yeah, there was the first big arc was the one that everybody really knows and watches, the whole bit where it's Rick Hunter, is called Macross. And there have been other shows based off Macross. You've probably seen one called Macross Plus. Mm-hmm. There's another one out there, and I don't know the name of it. The second series, which focused on like two central characters' daughter, Dana Sterling, is actually something called Southern Cross, and the mechs in that weren't planes or anything, they were more like tanks. And the third one was called The Next Generation, and that was based on this Mospeda, which, again, I'm probably horribly butchering, but that dealt with an invasion from an entirely different type of alien force than what was dealt with in the first two. But somehow this guy managed to put it all together, and he got like an old school musician who'd done like tons of old film scores, Ulpio Minucci, to do a whole score, a whole bunch of different music for it. He got some absolutely wretched 80s artists to do some actual songs for it. And if you can find it, it was the score of the century for me this last San Diego Comic-Con. Some guy got a ton of the original Robotech soundtracks, and they were selling them for $5 each.
Oh, my God.
Every single song. And it's... It was a trip down memory lane, and some of those 80s songs have not held up well.
I can imagine.
But
each anime had the mechs in them?
Uh-huh.
Okay, see, I was thinking it was like one anime was mech only, and then the other one was the romance angle, but that wouldn't have worked.
Nope, they all have different mechs in them. The first series, Macross, is mainly fighter planes that can somehow fly in space and turn into giant robots. The second series deals with, they're more like tanks, but they also turn into giant robots. My personal favorite is the third series, which is The Next Generation, because it had a really cool-looking plane that could transform into a robot, but they also had what was called the Cyclone, and it was a motorcycle that could flip around, and the helmet and the wheels and everything could become armor that you could wear.
That's hot.
And I saw that when I was in high school, and I was just like, oh, I have to have that.
I want that in real life.
Yeah, I wanted it like I wanted Kaneda's bike in Akira. Same thing.
Wow. Did the manga get brought over before we actually got Macross for real here in the States?
I don't think so.
Or okay, so that got brought over while Robotech was around.
I saw a couple. I saw a couple actual floppy comics, not any kind of trade or anything, of the Next Generation comic from Comico.
And, yeah, they did all of them. They did a Macross series, they did the other one, and they did the Next Generation series. They had quite a franchise going of the Robotech stuff.
And it was great. I picked them up when I could find them. I lived in not rural Kentucky, but small town Kentucky before we had like one local comic store. So if you saw it, you picked it up. Most of my comics were bought at a convenience store.
And I gotta ask you, the first time that you picked up a regular manga that was, you know, the regular manga size and flipped from, you know, the other way as opposed to, you know, the normal book way that we're used to, starts on pretty much the back cover of what we're used to here. How hard was it for you to actually get used to that? I mean, obviously, you know, most of your life you've been reading one way and then they throw it to you here. I mean, how difficult was it for you to switch over to this new way of reading?
I hear from everybody that it's really hard, and I just don't see it, and I think a big part of that is just inherited psychic stuff from my dad, because he served in Korea during the Korean War.
Ah.
Spent a lot of time in Japan, and when he got back, he would often read books backwards. And I always said, how can you even fathom what's going on if you're flipping through it backwards? And he's like, well, this is how they do it in Japan, but, you know, he's mostly looking at the artwork and everything. So when I picked up my first actual bona fide manga... not even two pages into it, I was like, no problem. Just going to town.
So you pretty much just inherited it.
Yeah, it's, I can't describe it in any other way than that, but I took to it like a duck to water. So you know, I don't deny that people probably do have issues with it when they're first trying it out, but I never had any, so it's hard for me to really understand it.
Brent, was it any difficult for you when you first started reading Dragon Ball?
Well, see, the scans that I read of Dragon Ball, they flipped so that you could read them normally. So then when I go and, like, look at it in Barnes & Noble, it's a little weird for me to start, like, I know that, like, all the Dragon Ball volumes have a instruction page or whatever, this is how you read it, but I can still can't figure it out. But have they been doing that since they started publishing manga in the States, or is that, like, a more recent thing? You know, reading from right to left in the manga volumes that have been translated.
That's new. That's new, say, the past, the last, 10 years or so, or something along those lines?
I would say 10 years. Bob could probably...
I would say, yeah, but it's new since they started doing the manga-sized ones. I mean, okay. I think that, as far as I can recall, once they started doing them in the smaller booklets as opposed to the comic book size, that's when they flipped back to doing it right to left.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Although, if you get, a Korean book, it goes left to right.
Right, that was what I was going to suggest, is my dirty trick. If, you know, somebody tells you, oh, I don't like that manga because I can't read it the right way, get them a manhua, H-U-A, or a man, H-W-A, manhua, which is Chinese or Korean, and they read what, quote, normally. They read from the way we're used to reading. So you can get them started reading that. The art styles are fundamentally similar. You'll notice differences the more of it you read, but, you know, it's a dirty way to reel them in.
I had a leg up from my early days of reading, actually, because I'm Jewish, and because of that, I read Hebrew when I was trying to get bar mitzvahed, and Hebrew is read right to left. So when I started reading manga, it wasn't too much of a shift for me, because I still remembered that, you know, it was still in there, even if I, you know, forgot every single word of Hebrew I've ever known, you know, since I was 13, I still remembered how to read right to left. You know, it took me, about 2 minutes to actually adjust, and I'm like, okay, so I'm back to this now, and just, you know, start reading it that way again, because I guess I had the leg up that not a lot of people actually do have, but I can understand why it would be difficult for some if they've been reading left to right their entire lives, though, you know, yeah. I mean, it's a change, to say the least.
There's a bit of a learning curve to it, but it really doesn't take long if you just sit down and apply yourself. I mean, reading a comic should be something that you want to do, so you're willing to make the effort to, you know, if it's printed backwards, then you'll just find a way to read it backwards.
I guess, yeah. Well, it's the panel layout also. That's the problem. Actually, I feel that would probably be even more of a problem than just the idea of reading it right to left, because the panel layout is different, because you're expecting it to be on one side of the page and it's, you know, starting off on the other side of the page, which obviously comes with the right to left, left to right switch. So there you go.
But the word balloon order is really weird too when you're reading it, because the English text is from left to right, but you have to remember to read the balloons from right to left.
Yeah,
that's the one thing that gets me. I don't have a problem flipping the pages, and when the panel layout is relatively, you know, easy, you know, like there's like 3 or 4 panels on a page, it's not bad. But some of the pages where they've got a lot of panels and a lot of word balloons, I will get a little jammed up in, you know, like which one to read first and stuff. It takes a little bit more effort. I mean, I can do it, but you have to think about it.
Are there certain companies that you feel do a better job of actually keeping things proper when it comes to the balloons and the panel layouts than others? Because I feel that probably the most faithful company out there right now is Del Rey, where they keep in a lot of the references to stuff that you only really find in Japan. And a lot of the surnames are left in, like, you know, people are still called Chan and San, as it were, as opposed to, you know, just changing that to Mr. or Mrs. I feel that that's definitely one of the biggest ones for me that's actually doing the job right. I mean, do you feel that there are any out there that aren't doing the job right?
I read a lot of Viz, and I think they do a decent job. I noticed that, like, on Dark Horse, like this one I was reading, Kurosagi Corpse Delivery Service, that, you know, I was telling you about before. One thing I find that's actually, maybe it's very faithful for the purists, but it is very distracting to me, is they leave the sound effects all in Japanese.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it's just, they're meaningless, you know, kanji characters and stuff on the page, and then there's a glossary, you know, like by page and panel, that like tells you what in the world, you know, that is. Like, I'm looking at it here, and it's like, okay, on this page, you know, Mugyu, sound of others squeezing in close. Well, geez, you know, I didn't get that when I was reading the thing, and it's just very distracting when I'm reading the book, so I don't like that. But I haven't noticed anything that distracted me on any of the other ones, you know, and I've read Tokyo Pop and Viz and, you know, other Dark Horse ones, you know, like on the Lone Wolf and Cub, they anglicize the sound effects and stuff, so it's not distracting that way.
Now, are they anglicizing the sound effects across the board, or is that just depends by company by company?
I had not noticed in, you know, and I'd have to go look, I had not noticed the sound effects being in Japanese in anything else. Like, I'm flipping through a Death Note here, and I see a clatter in English, you know, as a sound effect on a page, you know, and I'm looking, like, flip through.
Well, if there's one thing, actually, just to give props to Del Rey again, Del Rey, they keep the sound effects, but right underneath the sound effects is the translation.
Okay, now that would be an okay. Now, I'm looking at Monster, so it's not consistent across the company, even, because Viz does Monster, and it also does Death Note, so I'm looking here in Monster, and it has the Japanese sound effects, and in fact,
one is Viz Shonen Jump, and that's probably why. One's Viz Shonen Jump, and one's just regular old Viz.
Right.
So that could be it. There's different editors involved.
Right.
So, yeah. But I like the idea of actually keeping the original art in, because the kanji is as much art as it is actual sound effect. So just give that translation underneath, and I'm fine with that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Dr. Master is another publisher who does that, keeping the original sound effects in, but putting a small English version right in there. Like, I'm looking at one now, and someone's raking her claws and throwing some poor bloodied corpse to the ground, and you see all these kanji around it, but you also see splat. So you know that he splatted to the ground. And it doesn't really take away from anything, and it does help out an English reader who doesn't know the kanji.
I haven't read any like that, but I would prefer that to the having to flip to the back of the book, because I'm not going to be flipping back to the sound effect glossary on like every single page to try to figure out what in the world the sound effects are.
I've had those in a few of my books too.
Well, you should be picking up Genshin then. although you really should be. I'm being serious here now, but it is actually one of my favorite books, because it's about geeks, so that's a reason to pick it up. But anyway, what is manga catching that the regular comic book companies aren't? I mean, minus the fact that obviously, you know, they have the anime going with it. I mean, DC has started publishing manga under the CMX line, which is actually a Wildstorm company as opposed to a DC company, but it's all under DC's banner in the end. But DC's caught on to the manga. Marvel hasn't yet, minus the style that they've picked up. They've picked up a couple of Japanese artists here and there also. But what is manga doing in the market that these other companies aren't? I mean, is it just the advertisement that you're getting out there that the comic companies have not been doing? I mean, what can they do to get these kids coming back to the world of American comics?
I think for my mind, it's basically that these companies know their audiences. More so than, you know, there's so much talk on the forums lately of, you know, how is Marvel and DC going to win back this audience that they had for so long? Well, they're still trying to figure that out, and I don't know that they have yet. And manga comes in, and you know, the greatest percentage of manga buyers aren't kids, it's women. That amazing demographic that Marvel and DC can never seem to tap into for the largest part. How do you get a woman into a comic store? Well, manga's figured it out. They're not putting them in a comic store, they're getting them into a bookstore. They're getting them in the Borders and the Barnes and Nobles, and you know, these companies aren't stupid. They're hosting buy three, get one free nights, and you know, I'm right there with them. Picking stuff up, and I think a large part of it is just, these companies know who they're selling to. They know that kids are going to pick up these shonen titles like Naruto or One Piece. You know, they know they're going to buy them, and they know to put Shoujo Beat in Hot Topic, because a lot of women do shop there, and they're picking that stuff up there. They know to put a lot of the CNN titles, which is older person's manga, like people our age. They know to put that stuff in the LCS because they know that's where we are. Picking up our Marvel, picking up our DC, and oh, hey, looky here. Here's Monster, and here's, you know, in my case, Kamikaze.
Yeah, so pretty much they know their audiences.
Having thrown that bone in the ring, I'm going to walk away for 2 seconds. I'll be right back.
That's perfectly fine. Now, Bob, this is actually something to ask you as well here, because, well, where are your kids usually picking up their manga? Are they picking it up at Borders and stuff like that?
I order them for them. You know, I used to get them through my local comic shop, but he was extremely unreliable on getting them. So now I order them from DCBS with, you know, a lot of my other stuff, and it just comes in the mail. Every now and again, if I get a coupon, you know, Borders puts out these coupons, and, you know, we might go and browse if we got a 20 or 30% off coupon and pick one up there. But for the most part, the ones that they normally get, I just pre-order them from previews.
Okay. And actually, to ask you also about the CMX, and actually to ask Brent this also, but let me start with you, Bob. Is CMX an idea that DC is sort of conceding to the fact that, manga is popular now? They got to make their money somehow, so why not get some of those manga properties and put them out themselves?
I will admit that there is absolutely nothing in the CMX line that appeals to me, and I just pretty much skip completely over that thing. However, I look at the titles and the art style in it. It does look like it's something that would appeal to, you know, that female audience, and they just seem to be that kind of stories.
CMX does have a really large percentage of shoujo titles, which is women's.
Yeah. And girls. And it just looks like that.
Yeah. So I don't buy a lot of CMX either, but to their credit, they got Mega Tokyo in their stable now, which is an absolutely incredible series. And they've also got Densho Otoko, which is Train Man.
I was just going to mention Densho Otoko. I'm glad you did.
I saw in the forums where you said you preferred the CMX version, and I have the Viz version right in front of me. And
Well, you know what it is, actually? I think it's more on the story that I like the CMX more than I like the Viz, and you like the Viz better because of the art.
I love the old school style that he brings to it.
Okay, and actually there's going to be a third one coming out soon by Del Rey, and chances are once that comes out, I'll probably like that one better than both of them, because I'm a fan of Del Rey's putting it out, but who knows what's going to happen.
Well, it's such a great story that really anybody listening to this podcast right now, for God's sakes, go find some version of Densho Otoko and pick it up. It's absolutely...
Yeah, that means you too, Brent, for that matter.
It's such a great story, and you're missing out if you're not reading it right now.
Yeah, Brent, pick up manga, Brent. Come on, Brent, do it.
Send me some money.
It's a sappy love story, I'll tell you that, but it's definitely something that'll speak to anybody who's ever struggled with having to date.
Yeah, that might be the one for me then.
It's absolutely a classic.
Well, just to give you an idea of the story here, just to get a quick summary, it's pretty much about an otaku in Japan. Otaku, it means geek, pretty much. And he meets this girl on a train, gets up to Cojones to actually, you know, stand up for her, and falls for her, and pretty much goes on to a bulletin board after that to get advice on how to ask her out and how to, you know, treat her, because he's this, you know, schlubby otaku trying to date this attractive girl. And it goes from there. So it's pretty much anything that any geek out there can probably relate to, because we've all done it at least once in our lives. So highly recommend picking that up. Is that probably, yet again, something that we can relate to a little bit. So, Brent, do you have friends that pick up manga? I mean, do you have, better yet, do you have any girls that happen to be friends? Not particularly girlfriends, but do you have girls that are friends that pick up manga?
I knew a couple people in high school that picked up manga, but I didn't talk to them that much. I don't, like, the comic friends of mine aren't in multitudes. I just talk to guys in my comic shop, so not really.
Yeah. And they don't pick up
manga.
That's
a long way of saying no.
All right, cool. Well, going back to high school, I mean, who usually picked up the manga? I mean, was it the girls or was it the guys?
The girls, mostly.
Okay, and they were usually usually picking up the more cutesy titles as opposed to something, say, like a Death Note or a Monster.
Yeah, I dated this one girl, and her friend were really into... when I was dating her, she was really into Sailor Moon, and then that kind of stuff, I guess.
Yeah, well, Fruits Basket is huge these days, and that's another one that a lot of the girls flock to, mainly because of the well, it's a combination between the cute animals and the story is actually kind of cute in itself, so I can understand why they're going for that. But now, again, with the CMX line, could you see Marvel maybe perhaps going to the world of manga sometime in the future? I mean, they do have their little trades that they put out that are more manga style, but obviously that reads left to right, and it's not from Japan. But could you see them possibly purchasing any Japanese stories and putting them out under their own manga lines?
I could see them do it, probably because DC's doing it. I mean, they're not going to do it, you know, to further manga or do a great service to manga. They're going to do it to further their own wallet, you know. So it's going to come from a completely business perspective. And I mean, all the all the manga publishers you guys have named off, it sounds like a lot of the stuff's already being published. So I mean, what is left there, unless it's like totally new? And if you're a new manga publisher and you're in Japan and you have all these US publishers coming over to you, are you going to go with Marvel Comics, or are you going to go with like a well-known US publisher of manga like Viz or, you know, or CMX or something, or whatever else is out there?
It's a good question to ask. I mean, what do you guys think about that? Actually, that's a good point that Brent just brought up. I mean, if Marvel goes into the business, I mean, Marvel does have, you know, a much better name here in the States, at least, than, say, a Tokyo Pop or something like that. More people know who Marvel is than Tokyo Pop. I mean, what would you do if you were that Japanese company? I mean, would you flock to somebody like Marvel if they were willing to produce manga? I mean, what do you think about that, Bob?
I don't know about flock, but I think there would be definite interest.
Mm-hmm. Okay, more than a Tokyo Pop? Because obviously you've got that name and you've got that reputation here in the States that would actually probably get you a couple more people involved.
You know, as far as, you know, if you take it to the flip side to the customers, right, I'm not sure that the people who are actually going to the shop to buy these things, I mean, does it matter to that kind of person whether it says Viz or Tokyo Pop or Dark Horse on it? It's just like kind of like, you know, the bookshop audience. You know, when you buy a novel, do you care if it's by Del Rey or by Bantam or something? I mean, you're just looking for an interesting title or something that you've heard good things about, and you don't really care who the publisher is.
Well, it might not That's matter much to the fan, but like as a if you were publishing your own manga in Japan or something, then you would like what is in Barnes & Noble. It's like Viz and Tokyo Pop, you know. I mean, they have like two full shelves of manga, and then like half a shelf of comics. But I mean, that's probably because manga outsells comics in those stores.
Right.
But I mean, if you're in Japan and you know that this publisher is in so many stores of these three major book chains, are you going to go with Marvel, who doesn't have that much shelf space in the book chains?
I would agree with that. I mean, like, if I'm a Japanese publisher and I want to bring something over and I'm going for the bookstore audience, which seems to be the big audience, I would definitely go with Tokyo Pop or Viz. However, it really depends on the audience that you're going after and the type of property that you have. You know, if you've got something that you really think for some reason is going to appeal to, you know, maybe the comic shop audience or, you know, that, although I have a hard time thinking why someone would want to do that, because that audience is so much smaller than the bookstore audience.
Hey, baseball manga by Chuck Austin. That's totally going to do it. No.
You're right.
Well, to bring something into the whole conversation about Marvel embracing some kind of manga format, they are, because that's how I buy my Runaways.
I was just going to get to that. Thank
you
for getting there
for
me, Al.
Format, and it's irresistible to me because it's $7.99, it's six or so issues, and it's in color even.
Yeah. And that's half the reason why Spider-Girl got a new series, because people were picking up those small little trades that they put out on a regular basis, because they're compact, and actually they sell really well in the bookstores, which is something that can go right alongside those manga, and they can actually put them on the same shelves and, you know, mix them in if they want to, even, because, well, they'll probably get a lot of those folks to pick it up.
It's sneaky as heck, but hey, it's a great idea.
I really like those Runaways digest forms. I wish they'd do that more often. Not just with
titles
that
are...
Well, it's Runaways, Aranya, and Spider-Girl, isn't it?
Yeah.
But I'd like to see DC try and do something with that. Maybe like the new Blue Beetle, they could do that.
Yeah. Well, they did Emma Frost in that format. They did Gravity in that format. They did quite a few in that format.
Sentinel.
They have a lot of them. One thing, and it is color. I mean, I'll give them that. But if you look at it, if you like hold up one of those Marvel ones next to a similar, you know, Japanese one, it's about a quarter to a third as thick. Mm-hmm. And it's relatively the same price. I mean, you know, the Shonen Jump Advanced.
Well,
which is what you pay for a Death Note, right? And it's about a third the size.
Right.
Well, that's in most of manga in black and white, and I mean that could also be because like the Runaways arcs are 6 issues, and if you put 12 issues of Runaways arc in digest form, maybe you wouldn't be able to get that. You wouldn't be able to get like the spine to hold up as good, so it may work that way too.
Well, also combined with the fact that you'd obviously have to raise the price if you were doing that, and you wouldn't be getting that $7.99 price because, well, Marvel's got to make some money somehow off these things,
I think,
and that's pretty much how
they're
doing it.
A lot of these books that they have to a younger audience who doesn't have the disposable income that we do.
Yeah, because the Marvel Age titles are also coming out that way, which is definitely a sign that they're looking for those younger audiences, because that's what the Marvel Age titles are all about. Say, you know, the stuff like the Marvel Age Spider-Man, the Marvel Age Avengers, the Marvel Age Fantastic Four, all that's coming out in the small little digest format, so there you go.
Really what I've talked about with Steve Flintlock on the forum a lot, and we bring it up on the forum every now and then it shows up, what I'd really like to see the big two come up with some sort of manga influence is, I'd love to see him do a phone book, kind of like what you get with Shonen Jump out of Viz every month. I mean, I subscribe to that, and it's essentially for younger males. But I'm a 37-year-old guy, and I love reading it. And wouldn't it be cool if we could see something like that out of Marvel, where, you know, you get a Spider-Man story, but you also might get Iron Man or Iron Fist and, you know, maybe Ghost Rider in there. And it's just serialized stories, black and white, doesn't have to be in color. You could try out young artists who, you know, need to prove themselves or something. And the great thing about Shonen Jump is in the back of every issue, there's a little card that says, which stories did you like, which ones didn't you? It's business reply. See, you fill it out and put it in the mail. And that's how they decide what to put in. That's something that I would love to see one of these companies attempt.
It would probably sell better than those Unlimiteds that they've been doing, the X-Men and the Spider-Man Unlimiteds, which don't even really show off the new talent anymore. That's what they started off as. So maybe it'd be a good idea to maybe put something like that.
I just remember, you know, as a young boy, we had a book called Superman Family, where you got a Supergirl story, a Superman story, a Jimmy Olsen story, a Lois Lane story, and then another Superman story. And it was like $1 for this nice, thick book. It wasn't like phone book size by any stretch of the imagination. But you got all those stories for $1. And it was great, and it just seems like the company of those two that can figure out how to do it and make it work, they're gonna rake it in. But I don't know. There's so many logistics in it that I don't know. Not being an insider to the comics industry, you know,
that's true.
Didn't CrossGen do that?
They do it with some books I'm reading now that I picked up at a bargain bookstore, and they had one called Forge and one called Edge. And they collected, like, a few chapters out of each of their books and put them together. And, you know, it's great. You can sit and read it, and it's... I don't like to use the word disposable, but it's disposable entertainment. You read it, and you're done, and you're like, wow, I really like that Iron Fist story that's going on in this book. I should write Marvel, you know, in the little card in the back and send it. I'm really enjoying the Iron Fist story. Well, then they're like, hey, they like the Iron Fist story. Maybe we ought to color that and serialize it and put it in a trade, and people might buy it.
Well, what you're talking about actually reminds me a bit of what Vertigo did a couple of years back with their number ones trade.
First Defense, I bought those.
There you go. Yeah, which was actually, you know, just a first issue of a bunch of their titles. It was pretty much just a showcase to try and get you guys in. And it worked for a lot of the people I know. I mean, a lot of folks, you know, started picking up Fables and started picking up Why the Last Man because of those trades. And it would sort of be a similar thing there, only what you're saying is that you'd like to see entirely separate stories that aren't even possibly in ongoing series to be in this,
right.
Correct?
It could even be collections of older stories, because a lot of what Shonen Jump is just that. It's retranslated old stories that are put in there. But, you know, every month, wouldn't it be great to have two or three, you know, a 300-page book that has all these black and white stories that you may have missed from whatever, you know, either from DC or from Marvel, that you could just read and
Worked. That would work really well. And, I mean, I know that, like, the Vertigo one, for instance, I mean, why? That had a fabulous first issue, right? Fables, yeah. And you read the last page of number one, and you're like, damn, I got to read number two, right? But a lot of these series that are coming out now that are, you know, quote-unquote written for the trade, I mean, you read the first issue, and it's like nothing happens. You know, it's like, you know, there is no compelling reason to pick up a second issue, so that could, like, backfire depending on what you do with your selection.
Yeah, I'm not saying that I've got the answer for it. I just, it seems like something that, if they're really so wanting to tap into this whole mentality as far as how are they going to attract these people who are buying manga, well, manga is partially appreciating the art and the writing and the stories, but it's also appreciating the format. You know, I'm a 37-year-old man, and I collect Shonen Jump, and I wouldn't be reading Death Note now had it not been for Shonen Jump putting the first few chapters of it in one of their issues.
Well, you make a good point, actually, because in Japan, a lot of the manga that I currently read now comes out in magazine form first. Right. And Hellsing is entirely out in magazine form first before ending up in, you know, I guess what you would consider, you know, a regular manga here, but it's in a huge magazine format, you know, still black and white, but it's much larger art, and it comes out chapter by chapter. And every now and then there'll be, you know, a crap chapter, because that's going to happen all the time in a title. You know, they'll have at least one bad chapter, and then it'll go back, and hopefully it'll be good. But I can understand why American companies might be wary if, you know, if every chapter comes out and nobody's paying attention, then they got to move on to something different. So it might be a bit difficult for them to actually take a chance on something.
What about if Marvel and DC did that phone book format with, like, maybe that, like, their miniseries, like the new Doctor Strange miniseries could be in, like, a phone book along with, like, Fantastic Four to the End or something. Or, and then add in, like, some trial stories or some pitches that people drew up that aren't going to be published unless you write in and say, I would like to see this colored.
Well, you could do that. You know, you look at what they do in Japan. Again, when I was in Tokyo, I picked up some of these, and there was just a wacky variety of stuff. You know, you would pick up one of these big weekly things, and I got several of them, and they sell them in the subway. They sell them all over the place. They're not that expensive. They're printed on, like, essentially toilet paper. I mean, it's like this really poor quality paper, but I mean, they're black and white. It holds up. You know, you can read it. You know, you're not worried about it, and you'll have just a wild variety. You know, I'm reading through one of these, and you got a story about, you know, you got the latest chapter of Death Note or something, then you got some guy playing tennis, and the next story is someone riding a horse and jumping over things and doing that, and then you got some guy cooking, and then you have another, you know, adventure type of thing going on. There's just all kinds of different variety in there, and then it's interspersed with text articles. There's a lot of ads in there. You have pictures of girls in bikinis, you know, for the ones that are aimed at a male audience, and it's just, you know, it's kind of like a magazine, but it's got a lot of comics in it, and it's really not that expensive. And that's the other key, and, you know, the American publishers, and it's not cheap in Japan, right? Just in general, the cost of living is very high, but, you know, this is like 2 years ago that I was there. You know, I picked up, and it's this gigantic thing. It was, you know, several hundred pages, and taking the money and translating into American dollars, it was maybe $3, $2 or $3. And whenever they try to do this in America, you know, it's always on the high gloss paper, and it's fancy, and it's like $10. And you're not, I think that's the barrier, you know, getting people to try something out when the price point is so high.
Well, that's what they need to do. They need to get something that's, you know, not nearly as high a price point. And, well, something similar to, say, like The Essentials, where it's not the best paper, it's black and white, but it's reprintings of, you know, all the stories that everybody, you know, grew up on or maybe even want to catch up on. And that's why those sell so well. We need more of that.
Exactly. You know, and if they can make an Essential for, you know, $16, whatever they sell those for. And it's like about 500 pages, right, of reprinted material. There's no reason why they can't take and do a 200-page version of that or a, you know, 150-page version of that that's $5 or $6, and it's got a variety of different things that are going to try to pull people in that's, you know, maybe more recent issues. You know, kind of like that Vertigo First Looks thing where you're trying to pull people in, kind of like what they did with The Edge that you mentioned, or Forge, where, you know, it's a meaty chunk of some series and you're giving them to the people in this cheap format, and then if they like it, then they'll go and they'll buy the nice trade paperback to get the full story, or maybe they'll start picking up the regular monthly series.
What are your guys' take on that? I mean, obviously that's something that I think really could work if it's done properly here. I mean, if the page quality is not so good, and if it is black and white, if you like it, obviously you would be picking this up. I mean, Brent, would that be something you'd be interested in?
That would be something I would definitely buy. I mean, you can look at Countdown to Infinite Crisis and Brave New World. I mean, those sold probably through the roof because they were only $1. I mean, it was 80 pages, but if they gave you more than 80 pages for maybe like $2, maybe the price of a normal comic, but like maybe you could get 10 comics in that price on cheap newsprint, I would buy it. No matter what was in it. If there's one thing I liked, I would buy it continuously.
So in other words, if the rest was all, you know, just a whole bunch of men kissing, and the rest was one really, really good article, then you'd
might,
do it.
Not by if it was men kissing, but
wait a minute,
you know.
On the spot, that's not.
Oh yeah, no, I'm sorry. I had to. Since we are talking manga, I had to mention men kissing at least
okay,
once.
Okay, if the rest of the issue was Bruce Jones's Nightwing run, and there was one good issue,
oh.
I would still buy it.
That's cruel. That's cruel right there. But I can certainly understand what you're talking
about. I don't think this idea that we're tossing around here is in any way unique, and I'm sure that somebody at Marvel and somebody at DC has probably posted the idea out somewhere. The first company that figures out how to do it and make it work, they're going to reap billions. Not billions, yeah. But they're going to... It's something that could definitely work. They just have to figure out how to do it the right way.
Yeah, I think they could reinvigorate, you know, a lot of their titles. I mean, you look at some of these print runs that are going, you know, down the toilet on a lot of their mid-tier things. It's kind of like you mentioned Superman Family. I mean, they had Batman Family. They had a couple of other titles that were in that giant dollar comic format back then. I think Adventure Comics was in that format. And, you know, you had, this was back when Green Lantern didn't have his own book or something, but he had, you know, like a 10 or 12 page story each month in, you know, Adventure Comics or something. And you'd have a Green Arrow story in there and a Black Canary story, and then they'd throw in some wonky stuff, you know, like there'd be Black Hawk, you know, who was like, you know, when I was you know, I'd never seen that character before, and it's like, oh, that's kind of interesting, you know. And to their credit, back then, I mean, most of that wasn't reprint, that was new stuff, whereas some of the previous generation of that, where they do the 50-cent comics, I think, or giant size, it would be, you know, like the regular issue of Batman or Detective, and then they'd have a couple of older Silver Age or Golden Age reprints in the back. But that was another thing where it just draws you into that stuff. You know, you look at that and you're like, wow, that's pretty cool. And the audience that they seem to have for the showcase books and what do they call them, the Golden Age ones at DC? Chronicles, I think. You know, the black and white ones and the Marvel Essentials and stuff. Those things seem to be selling pretty decent. I mean, I go into comic shops.
Yeah.
Most decent comic shops have a pretty good size rack of those books. And they almost any time I'm in a comic shop, I see someone picking up one of those books. So there's definitely an interest and a market for that kind of thing.
Bob probably remembers this. Do you remember when Adventure Comics was putting out the color digests back in...
Oh, yeah. They had
the 70s, early 80s, and you got a Shazam story and a Sandman story and all kinds of old stuff. You know,
and they had the
giving us stuff like that again.
Yeah, DC Blue Ribbon Digest. DC had like three or four different digest titles that were just the little small things. They were a buck or something.
Well, they've got two of them right now. They're not a buck, but obviously they just started it up now with one of them as a Spectre and the other one I can't think of the actual names of the titles.
Mystery in Space
and Tales of the Unexpected.
There you go. Mystery in Space.
Tales of the Unexpected is the Spectre one.
There you go.
Well, those are regular comic
Mystery in Space
ones.
And Tales
those
of the Unexpected.
Those are actually both very good titles.
Yeah.
These adventure things were digests. I mean, smaller even than the Runways digest that you see. I think they were like a whopping $1.25.
Yeah.
And
when a normal comic was like 60 cents or 75 cents at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, so they were about twice as much, but they had four times the material.
Yeah, you got like a Shazam story, maybe one or two old school Sandman stories back when Sandy was his sidekick. Oh, goodness, there was usually a Zatanna or a Zatara story in there.
Yeah.
all kinds of just really old school stuff that
and
they were
Spectre, Phantom Stranger, or whatever. You know, that, yeah, that's right. They had a Ghosts one that had the supernatural stuff, but they only cost twice as much. So you felt like you were getting a pretty darn good deal, even though a lot of it was reprints. You hadn't seen those stories before. I mean, I was a kid. I mean, this is all new to me.
Yeah. And the thing is, that's what a lot of this manga that's coming over, to get it back to manga, is, you know, the reprints of stories that have been out in Japan for some of these for a long time.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
it's
definitely.
Just
without a doubt.
New to us.
Yeah. But especially stuff like Death Note and as I've mentioned before, Hellsing, because, well, sometimes it can be a year or 2 years before these collected editions are even released. You know, you got to pick up those magazines to get your monthly fix, as it were, because, well, it's sometimes it's not even monthly. I mean, dear God, Kota Hirano took forever to come out with some of those volumes. But that's something that Japan has and we have. It has creators that can sometimes take forever to come out with their stuff. So
yeah, phenomenon. What's really scary is
that's not just here.
A lot of that's just timing, because don't forget, a lot of these Japanese artists are putting their stuff out on a weekly basis, and it's just a matter of getting enough material to put it in what's called a tankobon, which is what their word is for these digests. And the thing is, like, there's one I read now called Excel Saga, which is like Monty Python for manga.
Oh, God.
And it has caught up to the Japanese print run now. So, you know, at the end of the book, they're like, it's going to be 6 months before you see the next book, you know, because the artist has to create enough material, and it has to be printed there, and then we got to translate it, and we got to put it in a book for you to get it here.
Well,
so
it's been 6 months since the last Hellsing, so I know what you're
like
talking
about.
Your book
is not going away by any way, shape, or form. It is in no trouble of being canceled. Mm-hmm. It just has to be made.
Yeah.
So it's really interesting now to hear all the griping that we get about late titles and late books and everything, and it's like, try 6 months sometime and see how that grabs you.
That's the problem with being
a manga
fan, I guess.
That's no different than, you know, waiting for the trade. I mean, the people who are, you know, primarily reading trades, you know, they'll go 6-8 months in between them. You know, like I read Why the Last Man in trade, right? I don't get the monthlies. And you know, I get a couple a year, you know? It's like, okay, that's fine.
Those poor guys who said, I'm going to wait for Manhunter and Gotham Central to come out in trades, and Manhunter's just coming out with number 2, and Gotham Central come out with number 4 this week or whatever. Poor guys.
Dude, Fallen Angel, okay? Fallen Angel from DC is finally putting out, what, volume 2 now? Or is it volume 3? I forget. Because, you know, it switched over to IDW, and because of that, DC was like, oh, well, we don't have to do this. And they got enough letters where they're like, all right, fine, we'll put out those volumes.
They're putting out volume 2 at the same month that IDW is putting out volume 2 of their series. There's going to be 2 Fallen Angel volumes 2s coming out right at around the same time.
Fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Yeah, that's why I went back and, well, actually, one of the reasons why I started picking up Ex Machina monthly was because I couldn't wait for the trade. And now I'm picking that up monthly. Girls, also, the book that's being written by the Luna Brothers. I couldn't wait for the trades. So now I'm picking that up monthly. And Japan, you're much more patient than I am. Let's put it that way.
Well, it's like waiting 2-3 years for the next Batman movie by David Goyer or whatever, you know. Chris Nolan, you gotta wait 2 years for that.
Oh, well, and the next issue of All-Star Batman and Robin, you gotta wait 3 years for that to come out.
Yeah, but
out,
I don't care about that.
Yeah, the difference is we really want to see the next Excel Saga or Batman movie.
Yeah, exactly. What about this? What about this phenomenon that came out this past, I guess it was about 2 years back, the Marvel Mangaverse, where they actually had their own manga versions of the characters. And, you know, it seemed to be pretty fun, especially the Spider-Man. I remember that actually being really interesting, where he was almost like this ninja-type character that was pretty intriguing to me. But is that something that could possibly catch on a bit more here if Marvel put enough stuff behind it? Because, well, it didn't seem to garner up enough to really have more than, say, about 2 sequels to it, which I think there was. But did they have the right idea here? Did they have the right idea of possibly having a manga version of their own characters to get in these manga-reading guys?
A manga version of Spider-Man's not going to attract anyone who's not already into Spider-Man, I don't think. I mean, all the Mangaverse Spider-Man was taking Spider-Man. He's in the same costume. They're putting him in, like, Japan or whatever. That's not really changing the core of the character. So if you're not into Spider-Man already, I don't see what your attraction would be to manga Spider-Man.
And if you're really into Spider-Man, you probably, you know, I think there's not going to be 100% crossover into, I mean, because I had no interest in it. I like Spider-Man, but I had no interest in manga Spider-Man. And my kids, you know, like my younger son who likes manga, I showed him those and said, hey, do you want to get this? And he said, no. He had no interest in it.
Well, because there was no animated series to
Spider-Man,
it. That's why.
But, you know.
Right. Yeah.
I picked up the trade of that at my good old used bookstore, and it was okay, but I wasn't blown away by it. To me, the best example of Marvel crossing over to manga was Jim Lee's work on the Heroes Reborn version of Iron Man. That armor kicked butt.
Yeah, with the little the little V propulsion
things
on his back.
Oh yeah, I could get behind this version of Iron Man. Sure, I mean, say what you will about Heroes Reborn.
Dude,
but
my favorite was when I think it was back when Jorge Lucas was drawing Mystique, and he drew Ava's into about three issues of Mystique. Mm-hmm. That was beautiful for me right there. I mean, there were Sentinels that looked just like Ava's, and that's a homage, and at the same time, it's a kind of a ripoff, but at the same time, it's fun. So
well,
you got
those back in Civil War X-Men now. You got the Sentinel Evas in there.
Yeah, no, I know what you're talking about there. Those were, well, at the same time, though, those ones are more just Sentinel White, I guess is the best way to put it, because they have their human pilots. Oh, wait, no, that is Ava. So
I think that raises a good point, though. I mean, I think if you want to have... If you want to see Marvel be influenced by manga, then let's see it that way. Let it be influenced by it, but let's not try to do a whole conversion to it, because it's not really working, I don't think. I don't know if it would work with DC either.
Oh, no, definitely not. I don't want to see a little manga chibi version of Batman running around. Yeah. Thank you very much. You know, that's just not going to work for me. So, also, I think the best part about the Marvel mangaverse was seeing that mech Iron Man. That was just a beautiful, beautiful picture to see right there, because it's taking Iron Man to the next level. It's just, you know, Iron Man in the mech. Hell yeah.
Yeah.
Do that on a regular basis. I'll buy Iron Man on a regular basis. I'll admit that. We actually have some forum posts that I wanted to read here, and actually the first one is from Miss Katonic. The second one is from Nightwing BK, so I think we can skip that one. But Miss Katonic has to say, I think that manga is just another media that sequential artists can use to feed their muse. The U.S. is really jumping on the bandwagon because it is offering entertainment not available in other formats. Now that it is really big, you can find offerings suitable more specifically to particular demographics. There is always the question to whom the big two are trying to appeal. However, with manga, the target audience is known and the style likewise label accordingly, even if the label is informal and not printed on the magazine. When I look through the latest manga review, I look for storylines not offered in comic books, i.e. Blame, Monster, Death Note, etc. Lone Wolf and Cub, Lady Snowblood, Path of the Assassin, and Samurai Executioner are all my current faves. Those in the know will quickly see that all four titles have a lot in common. I don't think it's necessary to try to recatch those that are reading manga. I believe manga is read for different reasons, and they appeal to different people or a different sensibility in people. American comic fans and publishing companies should view manga reading as a gateway to sequential arts, which our color and black and white comics are a part of. Just like we'll ask new folks what books and movies they like to better offer suggestions to comic books, we should ask manga readers what manga they like and know enough about their addiction to offer suggestions as to what parts of our addiction could be appealing to them. And that's, in my own opinion, Miss Katonic. And he has a lot of good points there. I mean, what do you think about that? That we should just be, you know, suggesting to manga readers what they might be able to like in comic books, just like comic book readers, we might be able to suggest to them what they'll like in manga.
I think as long as you know who you're talking to, you can probably figure out. My take is anybody who says they don't like manga just hasn't found the title that's out there for them yet, because, you know, anybody who says they don't like comics, there's a title out there for you somewhere, you just haven't found it yet, and I firmly believe that. I'm reading one now called Pilgrim Jaeger, or Jaeger, and it is a manga about religious reformation in the 15th century Italy, and two girls who are working to buy indulgences from a corrupt pope to essentially get their freedom. And there's a whole religious underground. Francis Xavier makes an appearance in it. Martin Luther makes an appearance in it. You know, so there's a manga out there for everybody, people, if I can dig this one out. And, you know, I think that absolutely what he's talking about is just, if you know who you're talking to, then you know, you can definitely suggest different types of manga for them, because there's so many. It's such a broad realm to draw from.
Would you agree with that statement, Bob?
I think so. I think that, like anything, you know, it's just like saying, I don't like movies, you know, because you've seen, you know, a couple of movies and you don't like, you know, the subject matter of them. And the media is not the problem. It's just, you know, what is the material? And I think there's a lot more variety. I would say there's a lot more variety. I think there's a lot of variety in comics, too. You have to go out into indies to get, you know, really the wide variety in regular comics. But in manga, you know, you have quite a large variety that you can find right there on the rack at your local Barnes & Noble or Borders.
So pretty much there's at least something for everybody out there. And, I mean, that's something that actually we just really need to make clear here because, well, I mean, quite simply, it's just like anything in the world. There's a television show for anybody. There's, you know, a radio show for anybody. There's a comic book for anybody. There's a manga for anybody. Just find it. You know, take the time to go out there and find something that you might be able to read. And, well, guess what? You'll find something you want to read. You know, not everything is the same in manga, in comics, in anything. You just gotta have an open mind and, you know, just find something that's appealing to you. If you like drama, hey, go out there and buy Monster. If you like, you know, comedy, go out there and buy Genshiken. If you like, you know, big eyes, go out there and buy any anime with big eyes, you know? Just have an open mind about this stuff. That's all you need. An open mind and the time to
read
it.
And also, leave that elitist attitude that so many of us comic book fans tend to have about what we're reading as opposed to what you should be reading, because, you know,
yeah.
I like Lost, my wife hates Lost. My wife loves Ghost Hunters, I hate Ghost Hunters, but, you know, we still manage to survive under the same roof together. And it's the same way with comics. I hate it when I see somebody like, oh, if you're not reading this, well, then what good are you? And it's like, you know, let this person figure out, just offer suggestions. It's not that hard to do.
Definitely. And, I mean, Brent, obviously, if you had the money, you'd probably be buying a bit more manga. But, I mean, do you agree with that statement that there probably is at least something out there for everybody? You just got to actually go out there and have the time and the effort. And
yeah,
the
if I had the time and the money, I'd definitely be reading Lone Wolf and Cub, because that sounds like it'd appeal to me, and maybe some other things. But I just don't have the time and the money right now. But they are on the trades to buy list. I will tell you that. So you may have a manga fan soon. I don't know how soon.
Good luck. I think there's like 27 Woo-hoo! Volumes in Lone Wolf.
Yeah, really.
Something like that, isn't there?
I didn't mean all. Maybe just the first four or something. We'll see.
Yeah. Well, the problem is about manga, it's addictive. All right. Once you start reading one series, even if there are 27 volumes to it, you'll probably end up reading all 27 before you know it. And it's sad for me to admit that, but I know for certain, you know, there are a lot of volumes of Monster. I know that. And I'm picking up every single damn volume of Monster as it comes out. Just like there's a lot of episodes to the anime of that. And I want to track down the anime to that. So, you know, it bridges both worlds. So, hey, I might be spending way too much money on Monsters in my life.
Speaking
of which, I know
that Death Note fans, the movie version just hit the import aisles of your local stores, I think.
Really?
If you start, oh, it did? Oh, my God.
You gotta see it, because ever seen the movie Battle Royale, the kid who plays Shuya in it is the star in this. And for all you Iron Chef fans, Chairman Kaga is the police chief.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Dude,
I geeked out so bad when I heard that. I was like, Chairman Kaga is in this movie. I have to have
Are these subtitled, or are they dubbed, or what? I mean, because I didn't
they're
even know there was a Battle Royale movie.
These are the imports. I'm sure there probably will be a later American release, but I know that they've got the import versions available now.
I'll just wait until there's a dubbed version. That's the kind of guy that I am.
Okay, so these are quote unquote black market as it were right now. You know, there's no official American
release
DVD, right?
These are imports from Hong Kong.
Okay, all right, okay. The Hong Kong subs,
yeah.
Which we all know.
There are
going to
be
now.
Two movies made.
Yeah.
Of it. There's the one, and then later this year they're releasing the second one in theaters.
Okay, because last I had heard there were three, but I could be wrong about that. So, and there's the anime. the Death Note anime is the fourth episode just got released online, so anybody who's reading Death Note, go out there and track down the Death Note anime. I just downloaded the fourth episode myself. 100% agree with that, and if Matt was on right now, he'd pretty much be saying that. As we had our 20-minute gab fest on Monster on the Comics Podcast crossover, so once again, if you want to hear us more in depth on that, you probably head on over there. But plenty of great stuff out there. You just have to have the time to read it, which can be pretty difficult. And actually, before we wrap things up here, I want to read some comments from the previous episode. I got to get more into doing stuff like this because, well, people post, so I want to actually read it. And since Mr. Brent was actually on that episode, we'll read some of the comments from that episode 22 thread. Equinox has something quick to say. Yes, just in time to keep me company while I work through my honey-do list this weekend. As always, thanks for the good stuff and keep it coming, Ian and Matt, and Brent too. So there you go. But yeah, the honey-do list, I haven't quite gotten there yet. However, my girlfriend did convince me to actually, you know, clean up my apartment today. So that's certainly something that I can understand. So let's put it that way. We've got Darrell, who actually has something to state here. The last time I looked at the numbers for comics, Amazing Spider-Man still outsold Ultimate Spider-Man. This is something that we mentioned on episode 22. I'm going to have to look that up because I'm pretty sure that Ultimate Spider-Man outsells Amazing. I'm not entirely certain. Do you guys know about that offhand? Or
I don't know off the top of my head.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I just read manga.
Exactly. Okay. I'm going to have to... Whoa, man. Whoa. Keep an open mind, man.
Yeah, what were you just saying about there's a manga for you and keep an open mind?
I'll tell you what. I just cracked open previews and it's got the top 100 for August. Let me see where.
All right, good. You go.
Speak amongst yourselves.
Ultimate
Spider-Man is sitting here at position 24 and 25 on the top because, you know, they put that out like. Every time you turn around, there's an issue of that coming out.
Yeah.
And I'm scanning down for Amazing. Neighborhood comes in at 47. Sensational's in at 45. And there might not have been...
Civil War crossover for that one.
So that might be artificially inflating it, although I don't see
I don't know if it came out that month.
Here. It might have been, you know, a skip month for it. But, you know, that is going to artificially skew the Amazing numbers because it's tied into Civil War, right, so heavily. But if you look at the Friendly Neighborhood and the Sensational, you know, they're down at 45 and 47, respectively, to the 24 and 25 for Ultimate. So that's telling you right there that those are outselling it.
All right. Well, hey, the numbers don't lie on that. But again, as previously stated, it could very well just be because they skipped that month. And, you know, with Civil War, that happens a lot. So who knows? Hey, we're finally going to have Civil War in a couple of weeks. Finally. Oh, boy. we've got one from Hawberk here. And I want to read that one here as well. Just wrapped up episode 22. There's a fantastic chemistry on this show. Now on to the substance of the post. Art/photo referencing. I've got some issues with this. Tim Bradstreet, in particular, is/was really guilty of this, and I think, in many ways, is the
progenitor.
Wow, progenitor. There we go. How about that? Progenitor for the whole photo referencing thing. To be fair to Tim, who is a very cool guy, the majority of his work uses original photography. The art referencing is something else entirely, and something that Liefeld, in particular, has been proven to be horribly guilty of in the past. In addition to the instance mentioned in episode 22, there's a New Mutants Cable taken straight out of a Harris G.I. Joe, and at least one entire page layout with Shatterstar from X-Force taken directly from Frank Miller's Ronin. With all due respects to Nightwing BK, there are plenty of ways of making poses distinct, to say nothing of page and panel layouts.
Burn.
Ooh. Well, what do you
got me.
Burn. DC cleaning house. I'm going to maintain my support of the idea that DC is cleaning the slate on the Reign of the Superman. Based on the way Johns wrapped up the Manhunter story arc in the current Green Lantern book, What's the Protocol for Handling Spoilers Here, I'm going to say that there's not much in the way of obscure off-screen death options available for the cyborg. However, I'm less confident with the generalized idea that they're taking out the entire Giffen era J. JLA. Granted, we've seen Booster, Blue Beetle, and Rocket Red make the move to the headquarters in the sky. No, not the Watchtower! But we've also seen Fire move on to Checkmate, where I think she's reasonably safe, for the moment at least. And that's Hawberk right there. Yeah, DC has a habit of killing off the Giffen JLA,
I'll tell you what,
whether or not they're doing that intentionally or not.
Fire in Checkmate is not even like it's the same character as Fire from the Giffen JLA. I mean, same color,
same color hair,
and same
much
bust size, but other than that, there's not a whole. I mean, she's a badass in Checkmate.
Yeah, I know. She was very, very different. Well, obviously, a Giffen de Mateus book is going to read very differently than any book involving Checkmate. But yeah, no, it's two different characters, really. I guess they just wanted to keep her alive to bring him over there. I don't know. I mean, but well, I know that that Ted Kord's death hit her hard, but this hard.
Well, they seem to change,
know.
And maybe I'm not remembering, but she's now being played up as some kind of a ex-Brazilian secret agent or super spy or something, whereas I always thought that the story was she was some kind of like fashion model or something, and now they're playing that was her cover or something. I don't think they really played her as as an ex-secret service type of person when she was in Justice League.
I don't think so either. I mean, does anybody here remember that? Because I don't.
Change is good. I mean, I've never read a Fire story until she showed up in those stories, and I really liked her, so I mean, you know, this is the first time she's really been in a mainstream book other than the Giffen, like, miniseries, you know? And Ralph Dibny and Sue Dibny, they weren't in anything but the Giffen series, and then Identity Crisis, and then the Giffen series again. So, I mean, before that was the last time you'd seen those characters as their Justice League run, and they hadn't been used. So as long as they're using the characters, who are we to complain, though?
I'm not complaining. I think they're doing a good job. Sorry.
You got to remember this is comics, because, like, in 10 years, you know, we're going to have an entirely different origin story for Fire, where, you know, she was an actress model who worked for the Secret Service, and now she's a farmer or something. It's the nature of comics to constantly retrofit. My God, Judd Winnick has given me a heart attack with what he's doing to Shazam right now.
I love that book.
I love it too. Don't take that the wrong way. I'm buying every issue, but
yeah.
At the same time, every issue
well,
is like,
look,
oh my God, no.
I've made this perfectly clear, and I'm liking it so far, and nothing against what Winnick has done in the past, but none of these characters have ever shown any homosexual tendencies before. If he makes any of them gay, I don't know exactly what I'm going to be thinking here. And again, nothing against that whatsoever, because I've liked some of his treatment in the past, but this is actually a bit of a spoiler here for Outsiders. But what he recently did in Outsiders out of nowhere just really just screamed to me, I have run out of ideas, and I'm just going to the well here of my
did
old
stuff. Did he
make
Thunder gay or something?
No. Wait, yes.
Did he really?
Yes.
Oh, God.
Yes, well, he did. Yes, yes, he did. And she's having a relationship with another member of the team.
Oh, Grace. I'm not even reading the book. I don't know what.
Uh-huh.
But didn't he introduce Thunder? Mm-hmm. Was she in comics before Outsiders?
No, she was introduced there, but she never showed any tendencies toward that before until now.
I don't know. A lot can happen in a year. I don't know what to tell you.
I guess. That was
so
1 year
all
later.
All Arsenal's going to do is just try to figure out ways to spy on them while they're having their relations.
Thunder will be the new Anne Heche of DC Comics. Back and forth, back and forth.
That's hot. Okay, I'm kidding.
Oh my dear God! Wow.
Again, I read manga,
and
this
just
is
like that.
I'm used to this crap happening every single
day. Yeah. Right. Sure. Exactly. That's it. You're reading nothing but yaoi from now on, man. That's it. I'm calling IGN. That's all you're doing from now on, man. But any final thoughts on manga before we wrap this episode up?
Read Amakaze by Satoshi Shiki, Afterlife by Stormcrow Hayes, Lunar Legend Tsukihime by Saki Shishonen, Pilgrim Jaeger by Tony Ikebaka, Rotip Zero by Toru Fujisawa, and pick up one of the three versions of Train Man that is out now.
He wrote that down. He has a list.
No, I've got the books.
You think?
Amakaze, the third volume came out on Wednesday, and I was like a happy guy in my LCS.
And you can all find this stuff on Amazon and some of it on in-stock trades.
So I'll recommend, just based on the blurb, Kurosagi Corpse Delivery Service. I'll give you a quick rundown here. Five young students at a Buddhist university find there's little call for their job skills in today's Tokyo, among the living, that is, but their studies give them a direct line to the dead who are still trapped in their corpses and can't move on to their next reincarnation. Whether you died from suicide, murder, sickness, or madness, they'll carry your body anywhere it needs to go in order to free your soul. So that looked very interesting to me. It sold me on picking up the first volume, so I'll be trying that one out. Everyone's already said all the good things about Monster and Death Note, so I wanted to pull a different one out.
Yeah. It's only a couple days after Halloween, and that sounds nice and spooky, so I might be in the mood for that.
Well, if you want a good OEL series, you can't go wrong with Keith Giffen's I Love Halloween from Tokyo Pop.
Oh.
You got to have a twisted, nice, warped sense of humor, but if you've got it, this is your book. You'll absolutely...
Well, if you like Giffen, chances are you have a twisted sense of
humor. Well, this is basically Giffen
so.
Without anybody to rein him in and say, oh, you can't do that.
Yeah. Oh, God.
I love Halloween.
Oh, man, I got to pick that up.
What's the publisher on that?
God.
Tokyo Pop. It's an OEL release. The story behind it's great. Ben Roman, I hope that's the guy's artist name because I don't have it in front of me, worked in a copy shop like a Kinko's. And this dude just kept coming in and getting copies of stuff with comics and stuff. And he wanted to break into the industry, but he never got his break, and he never could. And so finally the guy comes in, and he's like, hey, you work in comics, don't you? You want to look at some of my stuff just for the heck of it? And the guy's like, hey, this is really good. Yeah, I'm Keith Giffen. I'd like you to draw my book.
God. That's awesome.
I hope I'm telling you the right guy's name. I'll tell you what, hold on while you guys are talking. I'll find it.
All right. Well, Brent, Mr. I'm not rich enough to be buying manga. You got any last thoughts on manga?
Worth a shot. I couldn't find any complaints with this conversation. So
you can hang out at Borders and
I've done that for DC stuff.
Read all the manga you want.
That.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Barnes & Noble also. I mean, there's always at least 5 or 6 8 or 9 year olds sprawled across the floor at my local Barnes & Noble reading manga. So I wouldn't be shocked on that. But again, if you're not picking up Genshiken, pick up Genshiken. If you're not picking up Monster, as we've already said, pick up Monster. If you're not picking up Death Note, pick up Death Note. And Hellsing. If you like a story about, let's see, what's the best way to describe Hellsing? It's pretty much something along the lines of vampires, zombies that aren't really zombies. They're more like vampires that aren't like full vampires, but they're pretty much zombies. And the Vatican's involved too. So that's always fun for me. So, and also if you like guys in red coats, then right away.
Go. Can't find the guy's name, but I think it's Benjamin Roman. I hope to God I've got that right. It's called I Love Halloween. And
we haven't given like too much of a prop to Battle Royale. That was another one. I mean, that's completed now.
Yeah.
The 15 volumes, I believe, were all there were in that series. But that was one that was...
And the live-action movie. And the live-action movie.
I mean, that was an excellent... read. I mean, kind of violent, but
it's very violent. But if anybody ever tells you that anime or manga drawing is crap, shove that book in their face.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And actually, I'd say the same thing for Hellsing, tell you the truth, because Kota Hirano's style for me just, oh, that I that's bread and butter right there. That is just it just melts in your mouth, seriously. But, I think we did a good job of actually, you know, hopefully convincing at least a couple of folks out there to pick up some manga.
For that
bastards.
Matter, go find something that none of us have even remotely talked about and make it your own.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's the real fun of manga.
Yeah. Go to your local bookstore.
And come on the forum and tell us about it, you know, because there's so much manga out there. You know, I have no way of, I'm not going to go and pick up and read every single one. The reason I got into Death Note was because Matt, you know, turned me on to it on the forum. You know, he gave such a glowing review to it. I went out and picked it up, and I loved it. You know, so I'd love to hear from anybody who finds something that we haven't talked about. Go on the forum, on the Comic Timing forum, and just talk about a book that you found that you like.
Definitely, without a doubt. And actually, I'm going to be starting up a specific manga thread on the Comic Timing forums for anybody who wants to discuss manga past this episode. Definitely go on and do that over there as well. Hey, manga's huge these days, and if you're reading it, good for you. If you're not reading it, why aren't you reading it? There we go. But guys, definitely thank everybody. I got to thank everybody right off the bat here for joining us. Brent, thanks for coming back. And you'll probably be my, you know, hey, if nobody else is around, chances are Brett's around.
I will
Brent's
turn on Skype so Thursday nights just for you.
Oh, shucks. See, now I've got this warm, open heart right now.
That's
man, like
sweet.
You would not believe. Oh, and And at the same time, for anybody who is going to be at the Comic Geek Speak episode 200 celebration, that's pretty much a week away, and, well, I will be there. So anybody who wants to say hello to me, I will be there, and as will pretty much everybody, it seems like. But it's going to be a lot of fun, so I wouldn't miss that for the world, and I want to thank the Comic Geek Speak guys for actually starting things up in the first place, because, well, without them, chances are I wouldn't be here doing Comic Timing right now, so definitely want to thank them for that, and I hope to see folks over there at 200. Is anybody who's currently on this call going to be at 200?
I live on the other end of the country.
Yeah.
Well, I'm even farther west than Al,
so...
You like buying a plane ticket from Florida?
All right.
Well, Bob,
anyway...
You're still coming to Cactus Con, aren't you?
I will probably come to Cactus Con. I heard Perez is going to be there, yeah. So I will probably be back for that.
Oh, and actually, speaking of conventions, Comic Timing is brought to you by the New York Comic Con. New York Comic Con is bigger, better, and has double the space with more gaming and anime for 2007. Come to the Jacob Javits Center February 23rd to 25th and experience the biggest pop culture event in New York City, featuring comics, anime, manga, graphic novels, video games, trading card games, RPG, MMOs, toys, movies, TV, celebrities, and more. Guest of honors include Stan Lee, Jeff Smith, J. Michael Straczynski, and George Perez, and many more to be announced. For a complete list of guests, as well as show information, visit nycomiccon.com. Buy your tickets online now to ensure your spot for the 2007 show. Tickets are available now at a discounted rate for advanced purchase at nycomiccon.com. You can also book your travel arrangements online now on the travel page of the website. Don't miss out on the 2007 New York Comic Con. Visit our website to get all the information you need, and I totally said that all off the top of my head.
That was amazing. Wow. I thought you were reading up.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, I am. Anyway.
You fooled me.
But I will be there in the podcast arena battling everyone to the death, as previously stated. So that should be plenty of fun. And actually, it's been announced that Raging Bullets is going to be there. So Raging Bullets will be there as well for the podcast arena. So more of a reason to stop by New York Comic Con and say hello to your fellow podcasters. And there might even be a podcasting panel, which would certainly be fun. But Al, thank you for getting Skype to join us.
Yes, I love Skype now. This is awesome. Quick blurb for myself. Please go to IGN.com and read any manga story. That's probably me. Or any manga reviews.
Definitely. I'll go ahead and do so now, actually, to tell you the truth. Once I'm done here.
They're going to send me more yaoi.
Oh, well, if you're lucky, you'll get some yuri.
They're finally, actually, sad but true, I read an article where they're finally bringing some of that over.
Oh, wow. Hey, how about that? So if you like girl on girl, all right, well, this is where this conversation ends. And Bob, thank you very much for stopping in at the last second here. It's been a lot of fun to have you on, and
thanks,
I'm sure I'll have you on
me
again in the future. No problem, man. And from there, let's go to the usual segment here. The email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at cgspodcast.com/forum. And we are obviously the Comic Timing forum on there. It's graciously hosted by the Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. Please vote for us on Podcast Alley. The links are in the show notes and on the main page. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. Also, a reminder that Superman Confidential number 1 has been released, and probably about 2 weeks from now, we will be having the crossover episode between Raging Bullets and Comic Timing to discuss Superman Confidential number 1, and then once Batman Confidential comes out, we'll be on Raging Bullets talking about it, so it should be plenty of fun. So if you haven't picked up Superman Confidential yet, I highly recommend doing so. It's Tim Sale and it's Darwin Cook, so it's certainly worth picking up. Brent, do you want to plug yourself on Raging Bullets?
It was released last week, episode 22, part 2. That's it. And I'm also on the Smallville episode.
Actually, and I actually just listened to your Blue Beetle review, and it was plenty of good times there. So thanks for doing that, actually, because it actually caught me up on Blue Beetle.
That was the whole idea. Thank you.
That works. Please send your iTunes reviews on iTunes. They would be graciously appreciated. And before we wrap things up on this episode, I actually want to give a quick shout-out to one man in particular who actually just sent me a bunch of free comics, and that, of course, is Rafer Roberts from Plastic Farm Press. He sent me the first 12 issues of Plastic Farm Press comics, so I certainly want to thank Rafer for thinking of me and sending me these comics to review. I will have all 12 issues read, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, as I do want to review this on the show. So once again, thank you so much to Rafer for even considering sending me these comics in the first place. It's very generous of you, Rafer, and I thank you for the support. Please listen to an upcoming episode of Comic Geek Speak. It hasn't been released as of yet, but I did an anime report for Comic Geek Speak finally, so that one will hopefully be on there before episode 200 rolls around. So if you want to listen to me being me talking about anime, you can go ahead and do so there. And I played plenty of good anime music all the way through, so that was worth it. And Geek Speak's coming back. That's all I have to say. It'll hopefully be released by the time this episode is out. If not, then sometime in the future, SpeakGeekSpeak.com will hopefully be out by early next week at the latest. Once again, guys, thank you for joining us here on Comic Timing. It's been plenty of fun, and manga kicks ass. And as always, there's always time for comics.